Okay, let's look at some of the Torah from Rabbi Friend on the Parsha. He says, Rashi, in the, right, looks at the first pasuk, the Yetze Yaakov, and he says it seems to be out of place. He said at the end of last week's Parsha, it says, so Yitzchak sent Yaakov away. He went to Padan Aram to Lavan, son of Bethuel. Vayetze, therefore, should not really begin with Vayetze Yaakov. Yaakov's gone, because presumably he's on the way. The Parsha should have begun Vayifka Bamakim. He reached the place of Haramoria. Vayolen Shom, and he spent the night. Kivah Shemesh, because the sun had set. He says, obviously, there's a message in Vayetze. There's a reason the Torah said it again. Rashi says the pasuk came, he says, to reset the Torah narration, so to speak, because at the end of Toldos, it says Esav saw that his wives were causing great distress to his parents, and so he went out, right, and he married Machlas, the right daughter of Yishmael, to add to his wives. In other words, he kept his evildoers, but he got somebody to basically, he can say, I got someone good too. And he says this sort of takes us away from the flow of what the Torah is saying. And my friend says, hold on. Do we ever find other examples where the Torah is afraid that something inserted in the middle takes us off track? Is this a common practice that whenever we pick up a historical fact which is analogous to something a little bit earlier that we repeat? He says, no. He says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wrote the Torah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't get sidetracked. So obviously, he says, first of all, there must be an important reason putting the marriage of Machlas to Esav in at this point. Whoops. And he quotes Rav Yosef Salant, from his Sefer Ber Yosef. He says, Yaakov Avinu is a prototype of Golus, of being in exile. He says, we will quote, and we have quoted many times, Maisel Avoy Simon Labonim, what happened to Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov foreshadows what's going to happen to their descendants. And the only reason descendants persevere in conditions which should have taken them out of existence, and the fact that we're still here today learning, is because of what the Avos accomplished. This is where it all began. He says, let's go back.
Interesting.
Yeah. He says, Esav and Yaakov were obviously brothers. They went, Rabbi Hirsch of Shamshon Rafal Hirsch says, they learnt the same way. And Rabbi Shamshon Rafal Hirsch even says that was a problem. He says, trying to get Esav to learn Torah like Yaakov till age 13 was the wrong approach. And that's why it failed. And Rabbi Hirsch says, that's why it's critical to look at students and mold Chanoch Lenar al Pidarko, teach him the way he needs to be taught. Okay?
That's a novel thing.
Right.
Never heard of that before.
Rav Shamshon Rafal Hirsch, that's him. And he says, Esav hears that Yaakov's being sent to find a wife from outside the country. What does he do? He goes to Uncle Yishmael And he says, can I marry your daughter? He says, 1, 2, 3, it's easy. I know what to do. In other words, he didn't travel and spend 21 years with Lavan. Yaakov knew he had to find the match that would give him, or the matches that would give him the 12 Shvatim. He traveled a great distance. He spent 14 years in Yeshiva Shem V'Aver. And then he worked 7 years till age 84.
Trials and tribulations with Marvin.
Right. Till age 84 when he married Rachel. He dealt with switching.
Leah first.
Huh?
Leah first.
Yeah. He went through the switching, but he waited 7 years in his mind
for Rachel.
Right. And he married Rachel a week later. He took a 7-year IOU, Lavan.
Right.
Lavan wasn't worried that Yaakov would renege on the deal. Yaakov had, you could say, shidduch issues, shidduch problems, shidduch travails. He says, Vayetze is telling us the reason the Torah starts. Yaakov was beginning the Jewish advent, coming into the first type of Golus. He's leaving his parents. That's why the Torah stops and it says, go back. Esav took it easy. He went on to his email and he got a hold of Yishmael and he said, send me your daughter. And probably Yishmael, right, was willing to do it. We know, and I'll ask a question without an answer, we know Yishmael did tshuva.
Before he died.
Well, I don't know, before he died or even when he buried. Right, when he buried Avram, because it says he gave deference to Yitzchak, right, to bury. So, what's he doing being Mishadach with Esav? I mean, so, question. Wiser people than I maybe could answer it. And so we see the ease that Esav has, and we will read about the challenges that Yaakov Avinu has to face. And we will see that Yaakov Avinu doesn't complain to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He deals with reality as it's dealt to him. He didn't bemoan the fact and say, Rabbeinu Shalom, why does Esav have it so easy? Why did he have it so easy? You know what? Please answer. He didn't ask the question. Rav Matisyahu, Solomon himself, says, where do we see that Yaakov didn't bemoan and accepted what Hashem had in store for him? He says it's explicit in the first pasuk of the parsha. Yaakov left from Beersheva and went to Haran. He says the Haftorah describes what actually happened to Yaakov more bluntly. Yaakov fled to the field of Aram, says an Oshea. It was not really Vayetze Yaakov. He didn't go leisurely, right? He wasn't able to take the riches that he was given to marry Rivka. No. He ended up fleeing for his life. Eliphaz was going to kill him. He had to learn Torah with Eliphaz and give him the drush that Ani Kemeis, and then he got away. He says, even in the Torah, when Rivka said to Yaakov to leave, she didn't say, my Tyra kint, have a good trip. She said, get up, run for your life. She told him what the future was going to behold. How did Yaakov react? He went from Beersheba and he went to Haran at his own pace. He went with the confidence that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would watch over him. And we know then he stopped and HaKadosh Baruch Hu confirmed that his Amuna was well placed and HaKadosh Baruch Hu would respect it. And this is the way Yaakov's descendants were going to have to exist in Golas. We may feel that we're running for our lives at all times, but we also have to have a sense of calm and equanimity, Rabbi Fran says, knowing that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam does all, as we've learned from the Rambam. And he said, it's only because of that Amunah that we can say, Chayim Kulonu Hayoyim.
Keep going.
We're here today.
Keep going.
Right. Okay. My friend then turns to the Gemara that says, when Yaakov asked Rachel to marry him, she said yes. And she said, but you better watch out. My father is he's a world-class swindler. And there's no way he's not going to try to give you Leah. Yaakov said, hold on. I am his equal, his brother, in using trickery. Right? That's what he said when he said, I'm a chi. What did he say? I'm the brother of your father. I have the same ability. Right? I can take him on as an equal. If we need to get devious, I can do it. Even though he was the Ish HaEmes, he could use this when needed.
Rivka taught him.
But the right, the question is asked. It says, right, the Yaakov Ish Tam Yoshei V'Halim. Yaakov was simple, but simple meaning he lived a simple life. But he lived in the tents of Torah. When you sit and learn in Kailo, do you really learn this type of thing? And when you're learning with Shem Ve'Ever, the greatest Rabbanim of the time? Rashi says, each tum. He says, someone who is not sharp to be able to use deceit is called a tum. Right? Unwise in the ways of the world. You don't know how to do, as we say, in business, bedarf thine aganef. That's not in your repertoire. So what happened between last week's Parsha, Yaakov zi ish tam, and now he can make this statement to Rachel? He said, when we speak about someone and we say the person's a mensch, we say the person is a balmidos, a master, right, of his attributes, like a bal habayis, right? Master of a house, or a balasade, someone who owns a field. The terminology balmidos can mean that the person is a master over character traits. He says, with some people, their character traits, they wear on their sleeves and they react immediately. A Balmidos is the opposite. The Balmidos controls reactions, controls
his own reaction.
Right. Controls whatever character traits they have. Such an individual has the ability to employ even what he calls opposite, or let's say less than pristine character traits, but to use them properly and when needed. He said, I'll tell you a story. A Yid came, he says, to Rav Bunim, and he said he was too generous. And he said, whenever anybody came to him, he basically gave them the shirt off his back. And it seems like he was constantly getting into monetary problems, because if you give it all away, how are you going to pay your debts? And it said it got to the stage where he had to borrow money just to have basic clothing. Somebody then came, right, and would give him a sob story. He said, I'm going to quote from the Chozem Liblun, Lublin. Yaakov was referred to as an Ishtam Yoshei V'Holim. And now he says, if he needs to, he can deal from the other side of the deck. The Chozem Liblin, he says, it does not say, in part, that Yaakov Tom, Yaakov was a Tom. He was an Ish Tom. First, he was an Ish. He was a human being. He was the perfect human being.
Good guy.
Right. Who controlled. And Tom means he could use Tamimus. He could use the manifestation, he says, of simplicity when needed. Yaakov's default manifestation was using this trait. But that didn't define him. Yaakov ish, finished. Tom, I'll use it. The same way I'll use Simcha, I'll use Tamimus. He was in charge. And when needed, he could get down into the dirt. He was nobody's fool at any point in time. And when he had to be shrewd with scoundrels,
he was.
And Rebbe Rav Bunim said to the gentleman, right, with this attitude to give it all away, he said, all this tells me is that you're totally out of control. He said, it's very nice to want to be generous and to give it all away. However, I fear that when it may come to another trait, which is not as noble and glorious as being about Staka, you may also have no control. And that's what could get you into significant trouble. You need to be someone who can control emotions. Okay. He says this individual was a Baal Rachamim, a generous person to the nth degree. Right? But he says, Shaul HaMelech, right, when he was told by Shmuel to go out and to beat the Amaleki and to kill them all and to destroy all their sheep. And when Shmuel came back and he said, what did you do? Why the error? When he finally admitted with an error, he said, I had Rachmanis on them. I had Rachmanis on the sheep. And Shmuel HaNavi said, you're not a king. A king is one who does. He has a tzivui Hashem. He's told by the Rabbono Shel Olam what to do, and he does it to the nth degree, crossing all T's and dotting all I's. You can't be king. A king, right? You have the same problem that Rav Bunim's Yid has, that you can't control your emotions. It says in Pirkei Avot, for our friends, that a Baishan, one who's easily embarrassed, cannot learn. You can't be timid in a shir when you don't understand. You need to be able to say, Rebbe, Slicha, I really don't understand. Could you phrase it differently? I don't want to bother you, but I want to understand. You've given your time and effort to make this knowledge available. But somebody who's brazen, we're told, who has no shame, he goes to Gehenna because that person has no control over anything. Right? And again, it's a matter, right, that you've got to be able to use your attributes wisely, right? How do we define a yid, right? He quotes the Gemara in Yevamos, that we all know, Yisrael HaRachmanim, we exercise
pity,
empathy, Baishanim. We act in a way that we are somewhat embarrassed, or we make sure to do what's proper. We try not to embarrass the Almighty, and goyim lechasadim. And we are the people who do, to the extent we can, we do chesed. We do kindness with others. And in today's day and age, many rabbanim will say, that's become a fine art form that's practiced by so many. Right? We go back, as he says, to the Baal Midos. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from us. To emulate our great father, Yaakov Avinu, who had this ability to transcend whatever happened and act in a way that was appropriate. He says, let me quote Megillas Esther, which is timely because we're learning the Megillas, we're learning Masechtas Megillah with the Rav. When Mordechai was somewhat reluctant, right, to do what Esther had asked, she said, right? Or no, rather, when Esther said, I can't go to the king, and here's what Esther said, if you are quiet at this time, Revach v'hatzala yomoid lahu Yehudim. Salvation will definitely, right, will come up from somewhere else. But you and your father's house may be destroyed. Mordechai says, this is your moment in history. You either will take the moment, you will act boldly with emunah and Hashem, right?
You'll do the right thing,
right,
or this is your time.
Right. You will now, as Rabbi Lehrfeld says, you now have the opportunity to do that which your great-grandfather, Shaul HaMelech,
didn't do.
You can now take the responsibility to fulfill HaKadosh Baruch Hu's request to get rid of a Molech. He said to her, it says, your ancestors are Rachel Imenu, Binyamin, and Shaul, who each were quiet at times. Rachel, at the appropriate time, saved her sister from embarrassment. Binyamin didn't tell Lashon Hara because he knew what had happened to Yosef vis-a-vis his brother. Shaul HaMelech inherited that trait. Unfortunately, he failed. It happens, right? He says, you've got a chance to stand in the shoes of Shaul HaMelech and repair what would happen. And Esther came from a lineage of people who were silent. Her natural attribute would have been to be silent, to be reluctant. And we know, as Maimer Mordechai, Whatever Mordechai told her to do, she did. She didn't tell anybody who she was. She didn't tell that she was, right, a Jewess. He says, but she knew when Mordechai said, now is the time to stand up. Now was the time to walk to Ahasuerus and say, I have to save my people. That's the time to act. Right? Esther was an amazing great-great-granddaughter of Yaakov Avinu. She was a true Balmidos. She could act appropriately. She could use her natural character traits where and when needed, and for that reason, we know the great story of Purim, and the Gemara says that even in the days of Mashiach, the days of Purim will never cease. And maybe what it means is this notion of being Balmidos is something that will exist for all of eternity. That's the most important, or one of the most important, of the Yiddish DNA attributes. Use the attributes we have appropriately with Seichel, and hopefully be Ezra Hashem. Fair. Okay, have a great Shabbos, everyone.